Welcome, everyone, to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley, a national news and talk program dedicated to military veterans issues. And now, your hosts, David Corey and Richard Hurley.
Welcome to the Veterans News Hour. I'm David Corey along with my co-host Richard Hurley, and we look forward to another hour of news and entertainment as we discuss the latest issues affecting our veterans and their families. Thank you for joining us this evening. We would like to welcome and thank our newest show sponsor, the American Legion's John F. Murphy Post 303 of Bonita Springs, Florida. Post 303 is located at 27678. Imperial Shores Boulevard in Bonita Springs on Florida's beautiful and sunny southwest coast. If you would like to join or otherwise support Post 303, please call them at area code 239-992-2422. Again, Post 303's number is area code 239-992-2422. Post 303 has many outstanding events and activities to benefit both veterans, their families, and the community. So we thank them for being our newest sponsor. Richard, how are you tonight?
Great, David. Thank you. And that's great that Post 303 is one of our sponsors. It's always nice to have more sponsors. And I want to thank everyone for tuning in. And as usual, there's a lot going on in Congress that directly affects our veterans. Last week, we discussed the proposed bipartisan legislation called the Veterans Appeals Improvement and Modernization Act of 2017. I would like to revisit this legislation again tonight because it could have a huge impact on our veterans who currently have appeals pending and for our veterans who, as of yet, have not initiated a claim with the VA. We also cannot forget our active military who will one day be a veteran, so this topic is relevant to them as well. I want to remind our listeners that you can be a part of the discussion by calling us at 1-888-627-6008. Again, that's 1-888-627-6008. So if you want to comment on our topics tonight or have a question, please call. I'd first like to, since we are past the 100 days of President Trump's presidency, go back and refresh everyone's recollection with regard to his 10-point plan to reform the Department of Veterans Affairs. This is going to have an impact on the show we have tonight and some of the discussions we're going to have. This was first published on www.donaldjtrump.com on July 11, 2016. And the 10-point plan is as follows. Number one, Mr. Trump will appoint a VA secretary whose sole purpose will be to serve veterans. And he has done that appointing Dr. David Shulkin. Number two, Mr. Trump will use the powers of the presidency to remove and discipline the federal employees and managers who have violated the public's trust and failed to carry out the duties on behalf of our veterans. We're going to talk tonight about an executive order that's in effect that may give Dr. Shulkin that authority. Mr. Trump will ask that Congress pass legislation that empowers the Secretary of the VA to discipline or terminate any employee who has jeopardized the health, safety, or well-being of a veteran. Four, Mr. Trump will create a commission to investigate all the fraud, cover-ups, and wrongdoing that has taken place in the VA and present these findings to Congress to spur legislative reform. That has not been done. Mr. Trump will protect and promote honest employees at the VA who highlight wrongdoing, and he will guarantee their jobs will be protected. Number six, Mr. Trump will create a private White House hotline, which will be active 24 hours a day, answered by a real person. It will be devoted to answering veterans' complaints of wrongdoing at the VA and ensure no complaints fall through the cracks. Unfortunately, nearly 4 months into his presidency, President Trump has not set up the promised hotline for veterans' complaints that he vowed would speed up reforms at the Department of Veterans Affairs. Number seven, Mr. Trump will stop giving bonuses to any VA employees who are wasting money and start rewarding employees who seek to improve the VA services, cut waste, and save lives. Number eight, Mr. Trump will reform the visa system to ensure veterans are in the front of the line for health services, not the back. Number nine, Mr. Trump will increase the number of mental health care professionals and allow veterans to be able to seek mental health care outside of the VA. And number 10, Mr. Trump will ensure every veteran has the choice to seek care at the VA or at a private service provider for their own choice. We spoke about that last week. Under a Trump administration, no veteran will die waiting for service. However, before we get to his 10 points, I would like to mention the recent announcement by Dr. David Shulkin about establishing the Office of Accountability and Whistleblower Protection. If you heard in some of those 10 points, I think some of that may be covered here. David, we often talk about how the VA will never change unless the culture within the VA changes, which includes having accountability within the VA. What can you tell us about this new office, and is it really a positive step forward or just more of a political show for our vets and employees of the VA?
Well, as you know, this past week, Secretary Shulkin announced the establishment of the Office of Accountability and Whistleblower Protection. He also identified Mr. Peter O'Rourke as its senior advisor and executive director. Now, this action by Secretary Shulkin implements a President Trump executive order of just a few weeks ago of April 27th. Secretary Shulkin announced in his press release that he was pleased to announce the establishment of this office, fulfilling one of his highest priorities in the department. Quote, "We need to hold all our employees accountable for their actions if they violate public trust, and at the same time, protect whistleblowers from retaliation." He also said, and I quote, "Setting up this office under the strong leadership of Peter O'Rourke will give us the tools that will do just that," unquote. Mr. O'Rourke is a veteran of both the U.S. Navy and the U.S. Air Force, and has held executive roles in nonprofit, consulting, and federal government.
So, David, if we take a look at Mr. Trump's 10-point plan, it appears that with the creation of this office, that he will have actually addressed some of those points. Would you agree?
Yes, and I would add to that something we discussed about a month ago on the show is closely related to that, which is Congress, in addition to the executive order by President Trump, Congress is considering legislation that, at least in theory, should make it easier to hold VA employees accountable. And we can talk more about the specifics of that legislation. It passed the House about a month or so ago by along pretty much party lines. The Republicans supported it, Democrats opposed it, and now it's before the Senate. And apparently there have been some negotiations, and the Senate bill is now receiving a bit more bipartisan support in the Senate. So we'll talk more about that this evening. So there's legislation that's pending. There's also the executive order by President Trump, and then there's the implementing action by Dr. Shulkin, establishing this office and appointing Mr. O'Rourke as the executive director. So we'll see how it pans out. It's basically, you know, when you ask the question, is this more of a political show, or is it going to be a positive step forward? Well, part of the intent of the executive order in creating this office was to identify barriers, including barriers in the law, to Secretary Shulkin's authority to discipline or terminate any employee who has jeopardized the health, safety, or well-being of a veteran, and also to meet the challenge of recruiting, rewarding, and retaining high-performing employees, and then to report any such barriers, legal barriers, to Secretary Shulkin for consideration for the recommendation of more changes in the law, basically. So we'll see how that pans out. Sometimes Congress can act quickly. Sometimes it seems to act very slowly. So I guess time will tell.
Yeah, you know, David, I get a little concerned about the appearance of things getting done in the window dressing. during the course of the election campaign, Mr. Trump made the veteran a priority. It took him quite a while to finally name David Shulkin as the secretary, and I was getting a little concerned that he was forgetting our veterans.
Right.
And maybe there's a few things that are starting to happen now that could be interpreted as more of a moving into the positive direction to helping them. Now, would you say that we're still kind of lapsing in the disability compensation benefits side as opposed to the health side?
Well, I think there has been some movement forward on both sides. You know, we've talked in previous weeks, and we'll talk more about tonight, about the Veterans Choice Program on the healthcare side, and really that's just a start for what Secretary Shulkin wants to do to improve the healthcare side. He's got to fill a lot of vacancies, over 45,000 empty positions in the VA, most on the healthcare side. But on the veterans benefits side, the veterans appeal side, something we talked about last week, and which is an extremely important issue for veterans, has been the efforts, the ideas to fix, reform that a truly broken system that takes years and years. It's just really ridiculous. What's happened with President Trump's recent executive order is basically trying to give some positive movement on the accountability problem. The accountability really, in my opinion, affects both the health care side and the benefit side. We know that, you know, the most recent really big scandal was in 2014 with the Phoenix VA hospital, where it came to light that veterans were dying because they're having to wait for care. And then it turned out that the wait times, the statistics that the medical people out there were keeping as far as waiting time for appointments, were falsified. And they were falsified basically so the higher-up top management could meet their goals and get their bonuses. So some of the things you've already mentioned tonight about, you know, Trump's promises about bonuses and holding people accountable certainly applies on the healthcare side. And on the benefit side, there's still this big accountability issue, and we'll have to see where it's going. Congress is kicking around some ideas to dramatically reform the process, but without addressing some of the real underlying problems, which is a lack of enough people to do that. I wanted to mention something that I think is very interesting. Rick, we've talked about this before, is that, you know, Secretary Shulkin's predecessor, a guy named Secretary Bob McDonald, who took over when General Shinseki, who was the prior VA secretary, was forced to resign after the Phoenix scandal. Well, Secretary Bob McDonald at the time, he took over with great fanfare in the summer of 2014, and he was giving out his own personal phone number, his own cell phone number, and telling people, call him directly. Well, you and I, and many yep. other people took him up on that. And what I wanted to add to that was, a few moments ago you mentioned how President Trump has failed to set up a White House hotline for people to call, which I think is really needed, because yes, the VA has an IG system, the VA has all these toll-free numbers, but you and I know you call these numbers and seldom does any real action happen. So what are your thoughts, Rick?
Well, you know, if you recall, Trump on July 26th at his rally regarding the hotline, he said he suggested he would answer the hotline himself if the opportunity arose. And I quote, "This could keep me very busy at night, folks. And this will take place of the Twitter." So, you know, back in July, he was hot to trot on creating this hotline, and we still don't have it, which is a detriment. You know, I know when my clients would come in and they'd have concerns about the movement of their claim or something else that may have happened, and I always routinely gave out Bob McDonald's cell phone number and said, call it, you know, and leave a message. and, you know, someone might call you back. And, you know, I can't count how often someone did call them back, but I do know that someone, there were times when our clients would receive a call back. How productive that was toward moving our client's case, I have no idea. You know, which concerns me with what's going on right now with, and I made the comment window dressing because, you know, we see all this stuff happening with the whistleblower office and, you know, but is it something that's going to really be a positive impact for our veterans? Regarding that office, Tom Devine, the legal director of the Government Accountability Project, said he appreciated Trump's good intentions, but that it would be unprecedented for this office to be an effective, genuine resource for whistleblowers. As a rule, internal agency whistleblower offices have been Trojan horses. Basically, that means there is still a risk that whistleblowers will still face retaliation. Nevertheless, this latest move by Trump and Shulkin appear to be another effort to deal with the conditions in the VA, as you say, going back to the Phoenix VA hospital situation in 2014. When officials at the Phoenix facility were doctoring records. Then you had the situation in the same, in locally here in St. Pete at the regional office with Javier Soto, who issued a scathing report pointing out what he said was a poor and inaccurate quality control process for benefit claims. Then he was told his services at ratings benefits service representatives were no longer needed. Soto filed a complaint seeking protection as a whistleblower. He testified, I think it was two summers ago, in Congress, and he had a lot of interesting things to say regarding the VA system, and I believe he still has not received his job back. So, you know, I guess we have to let time move along and see exactly what this office is going to do for the benefit of our veterans and the benefit of our VA employees. You know, David, there's the Whistleblower Protection Act of 1989. Can you shed light on maybe the difference between this office and this newly created office and that act?
Well, I think the fact this act, the Whistleblower Protection Act, has been around for quite a few years, but in cases like you just mentioned of the St. Pete Regional Office employee, Javier Soto, who basically came forward and he testified before Congress about the mismanagement and even essentially fraudulent behavior at the St. Pete office, that he's basically struggled, I think, to get Whistleblower Protection Act protection. But I think beyond that law, what they really need is more focus in top management, and hopefully that this office, this Office of Accountability and Whistleblower Protection in the VA, is actually going to have an impact. Now, there are cynics out there that say, hey, if management is out to get you and you're a whistleblower, they're going to find a way to do that. And in fact, perhaps this office might serve as almost a central clearinghouse for whistleblowers who are then identified and then more easily retaliate against. I realize that's a very cynical view, but we've seen in the history of the VA seems to be influenced, if I can offer my own view here, you know, by two competing approaches. You know, one approach is an honest one that really wants to serve the veterans, and then there's the ghost of Charles R. Forbes. And those of you that don't know who Charles R. Forbes is, he was the first head of the Veterans Bureau, which was a predecessor to the VA. He was in office back in the 1920s for all of about a year and a half before he was essentially run out of town. He ended up going to prison for all sorts of fraud on the medical construction side of the VA, but also he had a notorious reputation for denying claims of World War I veterans and nitpicking them to death, you know, denying their claims for reasons that seem really very unfair. And Congress called him on it. He eventually went to prison. So I think, to some extent, the ghost of Charles R. Forbes still haunts the VA. And what you really need is dedication of the top management. Hopefully Dr. Shulkin and others are going to take this new office seriously and hold people accountable, make sure they protect whistleblowers, because it's the whistleblowers. You and I are on the outside. Our clients are on the outside, but it's the people on the inside. It's the Javier Sotos, you know, who work in the regional offices where the rubber meets the road, who know really what's going on in the VA. And the same thing on the healthcare side. It's the people that take care of the day-to-day work, really get the stuff done, who know what's going on and who are intimidated, afraid they're going to lose their jobs if they say anything. And that's why we need not just the Whistleblower Protection Act, but we need the VA's top management to have a commitment to that. And, you know, Rick, we know back in 2014 when Bob McDonald took over, that Congress took some steps to make sure he had more authority to clean house. And we know what history showed in the couple and a half years since then, going on 3 years, which was very few people were held accountable to that. And I know you've talked to members of Congress yourself and staff members, and they seem pretty disappointed with the inability of Bob McDonald to clean house whenever he was in charge. And now we've got this new secretary. Hopefully he'll have the commitment. But I really would urge our listeners, saying this really involves you. It affects current generation of veterans. It will affect future generations. And please get involved. Don't just sit on the sidelines expecting some other people to do it. Because if everyone does that, you know what's going to happen. Not much. So pick up the phone. If you send emails, go to Senate.gov, House.gov. You know your zip code. Look up your representative in Congress and your two U.S. senators. Send them emails. Contact the White House and saying, where is this White House Veterans Hotline that was promised? We really need it in place. And pay attention to what's going on in Congress. This Wednesday, 2 days from now, the Senate Veterans Affairs Committee is going to hold a hearing on Senate Bill 1094. That's the VA Accountability and Whistleblower Protection Act. That's the congressional part of what's going on. And just this past week, there have been more efforts to try to get some bipartisan support. It looks like there's more bipartisan support on the Senate side, trying to reach some compromises with what the House passed. The point is, pay attention. Go to these websites, and their websites are veterans.house.gov and veterans.senate.gov. Those are the websites for the two committees, one on the Senate side, one on the House side. And take the time, see what's going on, and then let your voices be heard. And if you're a member of American Legion Post or an AMVETS or VFW Post, Vietnam Veterans of America, Iraq, Afghanistan Veterans of America, any of these veteran groups, also find out what your national organization is doing, because it might not be in sync with what you think is the wise thing to do. And you can say, well, how do I know what my national group is doing? Well, they ought to be communicating within their chain of command to you, obviously. But beyond that, you can see what they're telling Congress. Go to the websites I've given you, veterans.senate.gov and veterans.house.gov, and look up. You can download the written submissions that your organizations have been providing to Congress on the pending legislation. And we're going to talk more about that tonight. But back to you, Rick.
Yeah, David, getting back to McDonald when he was given that authority to hire or remove people, I remember speaking to members of Congress who said that I think the number was somewhere around 10,000 people. He was given authority to arbitrarily remove them. I would assume this would also be, it would apply that if you have to add a nice, quality person into that position. But Congress said he didn't do any of it. I mean, they said that, I don't think he hired more than, less than 1,000, if that. And then I remember talking to someone from McDonald's office at one time, and he blamed it on Congress. So, you know, with this new legislation coming up, it is, as you pointed out, it is important for all of us, veterans, civilians, lawyers who are doing veterans work, to really focus on what's going on so that if this does pass, then there's no communication issue, and we know exactly what authority the VA will have, what authority Dr. Shulkin's going to have. As you pointed out earlier, we've got 45,000 job openings within the VA system. Just one final note on that whistleblower. We do have a current case pending with three women who work at the VA, and they are veterans who were victims of military sexual trauma and now have post-traumatic stress disorder. And during the course of their employment at the VA in St. Pete, they were subject of sexual misconduct and in a situation where the workplace was unbecoming. And it was the result of their supervisor, their boss, who now has apparently been removed and sent somewhere else out of county. But all three of them were experiencing harassment and retaliation from his secretaries, his under supervisors. And one of these women has since quit the VA, due in large part to this abuse. So it is continuing, and the retaliation by the people over there continues. And so hopefully with this new whistleblower office, they can start really getting to the heart of the matter and making the workplace, you know, because it's really sad. You know, these people are there trying to help veterans, and the last thing they need is to be harassed by supervisors.
Right.
Now let's get into the other action being taken in D.C. with the Veterans Appeals Improvement and Modernization Act of 2017. And you've heard me use the word window dressing. David, is this window dressing?
Well, in some ways it may appear that it is. And by that I mean Congress can now say if this legend goes forward, if the legislation goes forward and actually gets passed, and if it then gets signed into law by President Trump, they can then sit back and say, we've dealt with the problem, and not only have we dealt with the problem, but we did it with all the major stakeholders involved. And by that I mean, who are the stakeholders? The VA itself, as well as the major veteran groups. And you know who they are, American Legion, VFW, and there's quite a few other ones, Paralyzed Veterans of America, AMVETS, the list goes on, and there's quite a few veteran groups that support this legislation, at least in general terms. They may have some disagreements about some of the nuances, and then there's a few veteran groups like the Vietnam Veterans of America, Military Veterans Advocacy Incorporated. We're going to have its executive director on in a few weeks as our guest, John Wells. But when you ask, is this window dressing, it certainly could end up being that. And I'm really concerned about this legislation. And this is a huge issue. If I can quote President Trump, it's a huge issue. And I'm disturbed with some of the provisions basically that appear to be driven by the VA, which would take away the VA's legal duty to assist the veteran once a case has been initially decided. The current state of the law is that the VA, because it's not supposed to be an adversarial process, the VA has a duty to assist veterans in helping to identify evidence they need to win a case, to help collect the case, evidence, et cetera. And whether that's medical records, whether it's personnel records from the military, whether it's medical opinions, and the proposed legislation would eliminate that VA duty to assist after the initial claim, which is eliminating it at two very important steps, the steps that we see is very important if the case is denied, and that's at the decision review officer level, which is the first level of review after a notice of disagreement, and the Board of Veterans Appeals level. Now, let me back up here for a moment, because I want I want our listeners to know what this legislation is. The formal title is the Veterans Appeals Improvement and Modernization Act of 2017. Right now it's a bill. There's actually a House version and a Senate version. They're essentially identical. The House version is, the number is H.R. 2288, and the Senate version is S. 1024, 1024. And for those of you, and I encourage you to, you know, go to the committee websites that I mentioned earlier, veterans.house.gov and veterans.senate.gov, the two congressional committees, and pay attention to this legislation, because it really is important. About a little over a week ago, the major veteran groups posted their response, their input to these committees about this legislation, and most of them did support it, as I said earlier, which again concerns me, because these ideas seem more driven by the VA, and they've failed to really address how are they going to get enough people to manage the existing backlog. So that's kind of an overview, Rick. I know we want to talk in more detail, but let me throw it back to you.
I thought I would give you a hypothetical, and I'm going to play the veteran. And I come into your office, and in 2015, I filed a claim alleging numerous medical conditions occurred while I served in the armed forces. And then in 2016, I tell you that I was denied, and my case is waiting for a hearing with the decision review officer, commonly known as the DRO. And the VA has told me, Mr. Corey, that it's going to take 3 years and 3 months for a decision. And I'm livid. I'm like, 3 years and 3 months? What the heck's that about?
Right.
So I'm not going to get a decision until 2019. And, you know, if everything goes well. If not, you know, I've been told that I could appeal to the Board of Veteran Appeals. So, you know, I'm asking you, Mr. Corey, I heard about this Veteran Appeals Improvement and Modernization Act. How is this going to help me?
Well, quite frankly, I'm not sure at this point. Go ahead.
Well, you know, what can I expect?
What can you expect? That's a good question. So let's say you're a veteran, you file a claim, it's been denied, you filed your notice of disagreement, and now you're waiting for a decision review officer. What would this new legislation do? Assuming this legislation even gets passed by both houses and then signed by the president, there's a provision in there that it's not going to go into effect for approximately a year and a half, and that the VA has the authority to test out this program, which does make a whole lot of sense, because it'd be smarter to test it out on a little smaller level and try to work out some of the problems. But to be specific, this is what you're facing, because what you would be considered, what the legislation is and other people are referring to as legacy claims or legacy appeals, meaning those are ones that are already in existence before this legislation is even passed. And the legislation basically would say that, you know, again, it's not going to go into effect for about a year and a half after it's passed. And for claims that meet certain requirements after that, they may be given the option to opt into these new procedures. So basically what I would say to that veteran is you have to wait and see how this implementation goes, because the implementation of this legislation, we're not going to even see it implemented for a year and a half after it's passed. And, again, it hasn't passed either House yet of Congress, but there certainly is a tremendous amount of support in it. But here's basically what your options would be once this law goes into effect. So your case has been denied, your claim has been denied. Here are your options. You've got three options. Number one, you could seek a higher level review by someone at the regional office on the same evidence that you presented. In other words, you don't get to submit any new evidence. It's basically another review by someone in the regional office who, by the way, doesn't have a duty to assist you, and you don't get to submit new evidence, which to me, I've been doing veteran law for a long time, which to me suggests a very high likelihood of the same bad decision in the first place, because there's been no new evidence allowed. They're simply taking a fresh look, another look at what was already submitted. So you're going to get probably rubber-stamped denial. which seems to be somewhat counterproductive to the idea of let's make this a pro-veteran system, as it's supposed to be. Now, your second option would be, okay, you get this denial. What's your second option? Well, you can file a new claim, a supplemental claim with the regional office that would allow you to submit additional evidence. You say, well, that's wonderful, but I just filed a claim. Why do I have to start all over again? Is that going to affect my effective date? And the answer, the good news is no, they're going to let you keep your earliest effective date as long as you file the supplemental claim within a year. But the problem that I see is, you know, everyone talks about the VA claim system as being a hamster wheel. The veteran gets on this hamster wheel, and you're scrambling around, and sometimes the hamster wheel will spit you out of the system, perhaps with a win after many years, or sometimes you just give up. Or tragically, in some cases, the veteran dies before the appeal is over. But when I see this option being, well, you can file new claims, new supplemental claims, and that'll be your opportunity to submit new evidence. Well, again, you're still in this hamster wheel. You're trying to guess what will be enough to convince the VA. You're not quite sure because they do a pretty bad job with their duty to assist. Now, your third option that this new legislation would do, it would allow you to appeal directly to the Board of Veterans' Appeals. In other words, you get to skip a very time-consuming step that currently exists, and now they'll give you two choices with an appeal to the BVA. One, you can ask for a hearing in which you get an opportunity to submit new evidence, or you can ask for a second separate track, which is the non-hearing, no new evidence track, which supposedly is going to be faster. But what does that tell you? It's as if the VA is trying to encourage you to take the faster track, which would deny you the right to submit more evidence and deny you a right to a hearing. But yes, you get a faster track. However, the biggest problem with this whole thing is the legislation, it does nothing to fix the current backlog of between about 450 and 500,000 claims that are currently on appeal. In other words, okay, they pass this legislation. Meanwhile, they're getting new appeals, and what are they going to do about the current backlog ones that are already languishing for literally years? The legislation does nothing, even though as far as significantly boosting the number of VA employees handling claims and appeals, and it's a huge, huge problem. Right now, according to the Board of Veterans Appeals' own website, they are currently working on cases with appeals that have been certified from 2013. That's 4 years ago. And let me give you an example. This is another thing that's very important. I know we're probably going to talk more about this, which is how do you speed things up? Well, Rick, one of our clients, 85 years old. We had a hearing with the BVA last July, so 10 months ago. We had the hearing. The hearing, in our view, went great. However, this isn't like a civilian court where the judge makes a ruling on the spot. It is now 10 months later, and we're still waiting for a decision. And that's a case that allegedly was expedited. The major problem that veterans out there already know is that the VA tends to operate under three speeds: slow, slower, and then apparently not moving at all. And I don't see that this legislation is really going to be fixing that problem. So to answer your question to me earlier, is it window dressing? Yeah, I think there is a lot of window dressing. In other words, they've revamped the procedures and said, look at, and they'll probably sit back and say, hey, you got to give us time for it to work. It doesn't even get implemented for a year and a half after the legislation is signed. They got to test it to see if it works. And meanwhile, they've done nothing about the current backlog of what they keep calling the legacy claims. And there's certainly no guarantee that the new procedures are going to do anything to fix the hamster wheel process, where people feel like they're in a never-ending appeal, remand, appeal again, remand system. I encourage our listeners out there to please pay attention to this. In two weeks, we're going to have Mr. John Wells on the show. He's going to talk about his perspective. He's the executive director of Military Veterans Advocacy. And I also, those of you that are Vietnam War veterans, the Vietnam Veterans of America organization has submitted to Congress an extremely well-written memo in opposition, and they not only does the Vietnam Veterans of America oppose this legislation, but they made a point in their memo of writing the words, "We strongly oppose it." They put it in bold letters, and then they underlined it, just in case the people in Congress aren't paying much attention to it. So we'll talk more about this, but please, I urge you all to pay attention to this stuff. It's very important. So,
you know, another thing about
your question.
Yeah, but, you know, another thing about that legislation, and you and I have talked about this on many of our shows, is it does nothing to boost the number of VA employees handling claims in the field. And it's always been my opinion that is the core of the problem.
Right.
You have 30,000 claims pending in St. Pete at the regional office, with approximately 28 to 30 DROs, decision review officers, handling them, which means they each have about 1,000. And although I give DROs a hard time, even I have to recognize that I'd be very hard-pressed to say that anybody could get that kind of work done in a timely manner. You know, before I started, Corey and Hurley, with you, David, I was up in New York and Jersey, and I did a lot of criminal law, and I got very close to a lot of friends in the public defender system. And I kind of used the public defender system and the VA system and the way that the employees, the DROs, and the burden that's on them is very similar. You know, the public defender system, they're overworked and underpaid. They're good lawyers. They mean well, but they're so beat up that at the end of the day, you can't compare their representation to a private attorney. Now, I think the same can be said with the people down there at the St. Pete Regional Office with the DROs. They're beat up, they're underpaid from what I hear, and they just got too much work. And at the end of the day, I just don't think that they have the staying power to do the kind of job that it takes to really process these claims. So we will see, and like you said, I'm looking forward to hearing Mr. John Wells on May 29th. And see what he has to say in his perspective. Now, David, another issue affecting our civilian, affecting our veteran clients and veterans between the ages of 75 and 85 or older, and who might be in poor health. These vets ask us all the time if their claim will be resolved before they die. And that's sad to say, David, but that's what they ask me. And our answer is not exactly what they want to hear. I don't know. Assuming a vet comes into your office with this situation, this case is either in the initial stage, the new claim pending at the decision review officer stage, or even pending at the VBA. In each situation, what would you advise the veteran, and what actions would you take on their behalf? I know some of our clients are listening tonight, so
The starting point in the answer is to acknowledge the reality that under the law, the VA is supposed to process claims and appeals in the order they're received. That's what the law requires of the VA, and it's there so that they don't play favorites, okay? However, the law also recognizes that there are some exceptional situations, and as a result, the VA, both the regional office and the Board of Veterans Appeals level, they have the authority to move a case ahead of other veterans' cases. But it has to be for a really good reason, and that typically includes extremely poor health, and it needs to be documented by medical records. By poor health, let me give you an example. We have a lot of veterans in the system with claims, in the claim system, have serious illness, terminal cancer even. But then the VA is going to want to know, okay, they have a terminal cancer, but essentially how far along are they? How close to the end are they? I know that sounds rather cold, but that's basically what the VA wants to know. And it needs to be documented with records, not simply an assertion, and ideally supported by a doctor. Now, as far as age, age can also be a basis to advance a case on the docket. And that's where we typically see two different sets of rules. To advance a case on the docket, with the Board of Veterans' Appeals, they consider advanced age to be a veteran who's 75 or older. But at the regional office level, at least the St. Petersburg regional office that we often talk about, it's one of the busiest ones in the country because it handles Florida with a large veteran population. And in any event, their standard is advanced age is 85 and older. So to answer your question, what would I recommend the veteran? That we do make an effort to try to advance the case on the docket, but we don't stop there. That we continue to contact the regional office or the BVA, whichever level the case is at, and try to talk to a living human being, whether it's the regional office, the customer service office, about how can we expedite the case. Persistence matters. It's also important, as we've done in our work, and as I know many veteran service officers have done, to develop personal contacts within the regional office who can help break through the bureaucracy. Now, you have to be careful with that because these are people, these are VA employees who are trying to do the right thing to help veterans, but you can only really rely on them so much because they have to follow their procedures, and when you start making exceptions, they have to be able to justify that. But the point is, having those personal contacts can be very helpful. Many veteran service officers for these veteran groups have done that. I know a veteran recently who was diagnosed with ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease, and had to put in a claim, and the veteran group, Paralyzed Veterans of America, walked that claim through, and it was approved in record time. So it is possible. And by the way, for all the slamming we do of the VA, I do want to add, you know, that there are times that the VA deserves some kudos. And the same veteran who we are now representing on some other issues, he's in a hospital, a VA hospital. He can no longer speak, but he sent me a text message the other day because I was communicating with him, wanting to know how he was doing and how he was being treated. And his text message was that the doctors and the nurses at that VA hospital are treating him, quote, like royalty, which, you know, there are very many, many dedicated VA employees, doctors, nurses, and people on the claim side that they're very dedicated to veterans, and they do a good job, and I don't ever want to overlook them. But to go back to your question, Rick, I would say that it really takes a lot of persistence. We cannot guarantee success, but it's definitely you want to make that effort to try to get cases expedited when a veteran is in extremely poor health, which is basically terminally ill, documented. If they're in terrible financial shape, like they're about to become homeless, for instance, or going through bankruptcy, something like that, the VA will consider and moving the case on the docket. However, the caveat, as I mentioned earlier, we have an 85-year-old veteran. His case has been officially advanced on the BVA docket. Officially advanced. We got the BVA to grant that. However, when we had the hearing, it's now been 10 months later, and they still haven't issued a decision. It's absurd. But in any event, the squeaky wheel gets the grease, and that's what you have to do. You have to be as persistent as possible. So that's my answer, Rick.
Yeah, I understand that ALS conditions require priority processing. So in the case of our client, you know, I'm glad that they, went ahead and did what they were supposed to do.
Right.
But very, very, very sad. And I want to move on to something else here. I want to remind veterans that on April 19th, 2017, the Veterans Choice Program was extended. This program allows veterans to seek care at private hospitals and doctors instead of their local VA clinics and hospitals. However, veterans must be aware that the extension of this program is only a short-term solution. Congress must act now and before the end of the year to permanently fix this program for our vets and to redesign a better, improved way of accessing care in the community. We have many clients who have utilized this program, especially for major and minor surgeries, and it has been beneficial. However, if the program cannot permanently be extended for our vets, then they'll be, victimized by the president and Congress. I'm calling our vets to contact your senators and congressmen and women to insist that this program be addressed this year. Finally, before we wrap up, and I know we're getting a little close, an important program which we have discussed in previous weeks is worth repeating tonight. If you are a family member of a veteran who has left the service and is having a tough time transitioning to civilian life, please be aware of the VA's program called Coaching Into Care. It helps veterans having difficulty transitioning to home life. Returning home can be a tough adjustment, and loved ones can help. Coaching Into Care offers free coaching to help you help your veteran. Give the program a call toll-free at 1-888-823-7458. Its hours are Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Again, the VA's Coaching Into Care number is 1-888-823-7458. Let me also remind our vets about the huge number of job vacancies which the VA has, particularly in healthcare. If you are looking for an opportunity to work in a job helping and serving our nation's veterans, the VA currently has approximately 45,300 vacancies around the country. Go to va.gov/jobs for more information. Again, the website is va.gov/jobs.
Yes, along the same note, I'd like to say that if you know a veteran who is suicidal or in any crisis of any kind, the VA does have a Veterans Crisis Line to help. So keep your pen and paper out. Here is the phone number for the Veterans Crisis Line. It's 1-800-273-8255, and then press 1. Again, that's 1-800-273-8255, and press 1. That's the Veterans Crisis Line. Many veterans have committed suicide, tragically, because they didn't get the help they needed. So please help them get the care they need to cope with their problems. Again, the crisis line, 1-800-273-8255, and then press 1. I would like to thank all our listeners tonight for tuning into our show here on BBS Radio. We'd also like to thank our show sponsors, which include Corey and Hurley Law Group, Mr. Charles M. Newman of Florida, and as I said in our introduction, American Legion's John F. Murphy, Post 303 of Bonita Springs, Florida. As I said earlier, Post 303 is located at 27678 Imperial Shores Boulevard in Bonita Springs, Florida. Zip code 34134. So if you live in the area of Bonita Springs, which is a beautiful part of the southwest coast of the state of Florida, contact them. If you'd like to join or support them in some way, their phone number is area code 239-992-2422. That's area code 239-992-2422. As I said earlier, Post 303 has many great events and activities for veterans, families, and the community. And finally, we'd like to thank our producer here at BBS Radio, Mr. Doug Newsom. We'd like to invite listeners to become show guests if you're interested. We'd be honored to have you on our show and dedicate part or all the show to you sharing your knowledge, your insights about veteran issues. So please contact us. Our contact number, our phone numbers are on our show's website, which is bbsradio.com/TheVeteransNewsHour. You can find our prior shows archived there for your benefit. And we'll be back next Monday evening, 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Central, 7 p.m. Mountain, and 6 p.m. Pacific Time here on bbsradio.com Station 1. And thanks again. That's our show for tonight. Thanks, Richard, and please, everyone, tune in next week for another great show.
Thanks, David. Good night.
Good night.
Thank you for listening to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley. We hope you found this week's program very informative. Be sure to invite your friends and all the veterans you know to tune in next week when we'll have another great show on veterans issues. Meanwhile, you can listen to our other recorded episodes on the Veterans News Hour webpage on bbsradio.com. Thanks again for listening to the Veterans News Hour.